everybody.
Hi, you're listening to Go See a Show, the Off-Off-Broadway podcast. In this episode, I have the pleasure of interviewing a friend of mine, the talented director Miss Rachel Dart, along with playwright David L. Williams, writer of the new show presented by the great folks in Amios. The play is In the Meantime, directed by Rachel. You'll hear me mention in the interview that I can't wait to see the play. Well, I actually saw Invited Dress yesterday, and the play is every bit as intriguing when you see it live as it seems to be when you hear it described. Take a listen.
So we have David L. Williams, you're the playwright of In the Meantime, and Rachel Dart, the director. And the company, producing company, is Amios, of course. And
yes.
This is not Amios' first rodeo with Go See a Show, but awesome to have them back. So, David, can you give us like a brief rundown on what In the Meantime is about? I'm sure as a playwright, you must hate that question.
You know what? I have to get better at it, so I'm going to get better at it.
Practice.
Absolutely. I don't have the luxury of hating it. It's a play about three people in a bar, a couple, Edgar and Gretchen, and a woman who's sitting at the bar by herself named Aster. They're there on an evening as a football game is ending on the television in the bar. And then all of a sudden, the three of them are sort of able to replay the same moments over and over again and make decisions, whatever decisions they want, and sort of change the universe over and over again how they like it. And it's about what happens and what that kind of power can do and what it means you get, what you get from that and what you have to give up from that. That's probably the gist of it. Rachel?
Yeah, I agree. We spent a lot of time talking in rehearsal about sort of like, not a lot of time, but some time talking about how to sum it up. And I think you just did a great job. And yeah, sort of thematically, it's about like the consequences of, it's sort of about weighing the value of your memories, whether they're good or bad, against the opportunity to like not have to deal with them anymore. You know what I mean? Like if you could live your life in a way that had no consequences, would you, and at what cost?
Yeah, my very shorthand way of saying it is it's about three people who are obsessed with the present to the, you know, detriment of everything else.
I like that. I support that.
So sign.
This it sounds sort of Groundhog Day-esque, is that right? I'm sure you've heard that before too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. A little bit. I think it's I love Groundhog Day. I think it is less about it's more if Groundhog Day was spread out among three different people and they all had to come to some sort of agreement of what
right.
what we would keep doing. So
they all have to cooperate with each other.
Yeah. So it's sort of No Exit and Groundhog Day in the same breath.
Yes.
As I shoot really high. It's like Hamlet and Jesus in one.
So where did the what was the inspiration for the play, David?
I had this notion at one point about doing a trio of plays about people who are obsessed with the present, the past, and the future. And one of them is basically just a monologue. It's the past one, and this is the present one. And some of the idea just came from this. You know, I used to write in bars a lot when I was living in New York and single, because there's nothing more attractive than somebody writing at a bar broodingly. So
this is how you met your partner, correct?
Yeah, that is how I did not meet my partner at all. But don't ever tell a 24-year-old writer that, because he won't believe you.
That is so true.
So I was thinking about that and just the idea, and I'm a football fan as well, and just the idea of what would be the benefit of being able to sort of forget your entire past and keep remaking, you know, your present over and over again, and what is the corruption of that? Where can that lead? It's not a really sexy story, but it's just sort of an idea I had and one that I wanted to play out.
Well, it sounds like it was one that had a successful play out, at least on the page, because Amios is producing the work. Have you worked with Amios before?
I have. I've done a bunch of their Shots series, which are really super fun to do.
Yeah, that's what we did on the podcast last time with Amios, and it's such a great program. So, yeah. But this is not out of the Shots style, is it?
No, I work with them on Shots, and then they did a series of one acts called Arrivals and Departures, which Rachel and I worked on in November, December. Which was sort of the Shot style, but for a one-act play.
Right.
And then they had something fall through, I believe, regarding full-length they were working on, a couple of full-lengths they were working on. And one of the members of the company, Rob Hilly, called me up and said, you know, we're in this situation. We're looking for plays that are this length and have this many characters and things like that. Do you have anything in your drawer? And so I sent him in the meantime, which has been sitting in my drawer for a while, and he and I guess some of the rest of Amios really responded to it, and here we are.
Nice. I was actually just talking to another writer, not for the podcast, just a friend, about the importance of having work as a writer in your back pocket so that when that producer comes up and says, like, you know what, I like this work of yours, or I saw this play of yours. What else you got? Something hanging out there. So that's cool.
It's great. I mean, you have to kind of forget the fact that you're doing something that may not get produced for, you know, a decade or something like that, but it's good to have those things around. Absolutely.
And David, you wrote the play that Rachel directed in Shots?
Departures. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did.
What was the name of that one again?
The Counteroffer.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So David, I didn't get a chance to gush off mic. So I loved that play.
I would rather you gush on mic. So I can play it back for me whenever
please
I want.
Please include this in the podcast and share with all your friends. So this sounds like an interesting play to make realize in a theatrical setting, as you know, things repeat over and over again. Rachel, can you give us any sense of like the thorny things you've had to deal with in staging the same events played over and over?
Well, one thing that's awesome about this play is that basically with every sort of go round, every variation, they all begin the same way. And then they all diverge because each, you know, belongs to a different character. So there's really only like 35 seconds of the same thing happening over and over. And then after that, it all varies pretty widely. So there wasn't kind of the challenge that you might think of like, oh my God, how are we going to make this interesting if we're seeing the same thing over and over? It's like it begins the same way, and then moments later, maybe not even 30 seconds later, it diverges along each person's path based on who they are and what their needs are and what have you, which is cool. And so the way it works is that each character of their has a variation that belongs to them. And then another character gets to pause the variations as they're going along to sort of like comment or, you know, put their two cents in or object or what have you, which makes for an interesting challenge if you're the person whose variation it is, and you have to contend with this other person, like being able to kind of hold you at will, which is really fun to work with.
is this a holding at will within the world of the play, or like an aside meta play sort of thing?
No, it's total. That's a great question. It's totally within the world of the play.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Does anything happen dramatically? Like, is there like a lighting indication of this? Is there a sound like it? How, or is it all in the text? Because it sounds like it could totally work with just the text.
It's all in the text. Yeah.
Wow.
Our designer, Lindsay Simon, and I talked about that. And we, you know, there are going to be sort of like subtle shifts in lighting between each person's from variation to variation, but not in and out of the holds, because I think that I don't think it's necessary, which is really cool.
From the way you're describing it, it doesn't sound like it would be necessary at all, and I think it might add to a sense for the audience of, I guess, the weirdness the pleasant weirdness of the situation that they're in.
Right. And I feel like it would be, and sometimes we go in and out of holds very quickly. And so to sort of have the light cues change would hinder us rather than help us in that case.
The other thing, as a fellow director, the other thing that I'm thinking about with this show is, you know, you talked about these different characters trying out different possibilities, essentially. And when you're on stage as an actor, I'm actually currently acting in the show right now, and the director's always, you know, giving us, what do you want? What does your character want? Of course, you know, that old standby of directing, and I ask it as well. So it seems like the characters as written might be confused as to what they want or changing what they want scene to scene. Is that correct?
Yes. I mean, David, feel free to correct me or jump in here, but I don't think it's so much that they're confused about what they want, but that the things that they want keep changing.
I think that's absolutely it. And I think the possibilities that begin to open up for them make them change just their viewpoint of what could be possible. And what, you know, I think they all begin to grasp the gravity of these things at different times and the possibilities at different times. And so what they want is constantly changing. It is in some ways kind of great for actors to be able to say, you know, what is it I want in this moment? Because that's a lot of it. They're acting on want in a lot of the play. So it helps, I think, that idea.
Right, and they're acting on wants that in their mind don't have consequences.
Right.
Or do, depending on the characters. Like, some of the characters feel strongly that, like, you know, the consequences of our actions cannot be so easily escaped, and others are like, sweet, I can do whatever I want.
Yeah, there's a line in the play that one of the characters has. I don't want to spoil, like, just who the people are and things like that, but one of the characters says, I've never done anything, so I've never done anything wrong. And that is one viewpoint of that sort of living constantly in the present, is that you're unencumbered by these things.
Right.
So you can mold yourself however you'd like.
From moment to moment?
From moment to moment.
Wow.
Yeah.
But you're still contending with two other people who can stop you if they need be. But, you know, there's lots of bargaining and, you know, figuring things out as you go along and making deals and things like that.
This sounds
like the greatest play ever, I know. Oh, wait, sorry.
I know, from the deepest play ever to the greatest play ever. So it's sounding like something that I would be challenged with in a philosophy class, actually. Like, you know, one of your college professors would present to you and say, like, figure this out. So I'm hoping that I get to see this one. This sounds great. The other thing that I wanted to bring up, and this is totally maybe selfish because Augusto Boal is one of my very favorite theater thinkers and practitioners, and it sounds like you've got a bit of Boal in here in the sense of his idea of rehearsal for the revolution, but you've got it within a fictional context, which is really curious. Are you familiar with the rehearsal for the revolution idea?
I'm very familiar with Boal. I took a class that was a performance studies class in college that was pretty much exclusively devoted to him. And it's something I've occasionally directed things, and it's something I would often use in rehearsal just to sort of get people thinking about things in new ways. I mean, I hadn't, you know, sort of consciously thought of it, but as you mentioned it, I'm like, oh yeah, this is a lot of Boal stuff. It's almost if some sort of anti-Boal had dedicated theater to being as selfish as possible. If you're, you know, the rainbow of desire, if the desire is all, you know, for your own gain. But yeah, I think there's a really good parallel there.
It just sounds really fascinating. I'm really looking forward to seeing this. So that's probably a good segue to when can I see this? When can folks go see it, and where are you guys going to be?
The show is at Under St. Mark's, and it opens May 3rd. And it runs Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays until May 19th. So you'll have 3 weekends to come check it out.
And get more info on the show at Under St. Mark or the Under St. Mark's website. I can totally link to that. Or at the Amios website, correct?
Yes.
Great. Any final thoughts, guys? I'd like to just kind of give you the opportunity to throw anything in at the last minute if you'd like.
I mean, the one thing that I would add is that, I don't know, we've been talking about the show in a way that it makes it sound very serious, and there certainly are moments that are very serious, but it's also really funny and it's really clever, and it's really, like, it is challenging as well as fun.
From speaking to David for the last 15 minutes, I'm sure the script has some great one-liners in it, at the least.
It certainly does. David is very economical, and he is very... His plays crackle along in this way that I just find totally delightful. And yes, good Lord, so many good one-liners. It's such a pleasure. That's my final word, I guess.
I love to see love between playwright and director. This is great.
Rachel and I work really well together. Our discussions about changes in the script and things like that are like, oh, that's fine, whatever. No, that works. Okay, great, cool, fun, whatever.
Yeah.
For final words for me, I would reiterate that we're making, you know, we have at moments made it sound like an academic exercise when it really is a play about three people in a bar. And and the trouble that that can bring in general. It's a play about that. It's a play about football. It's a play about lots of different things. But it is, I think, I'd like to believe a really fun play that we'll hopefully have you talking when you leave there. And now I figure you're just going to talk about how much you like the counteroffer for 15 minutes, right? Is that how we're going to end?
I won't keep you guys on the line for that, but of course I will include a big, long diatribe about actually not a diatribe, that's not the way, a discourse, I guess, on the way my life was changed.
Fantastic.
So actually, I had one last question because it reminds me of, speaking of the counteroffer, it reminded me of it. What is the impetus for this situation that your characters find themselves in, it's, you know, a magical sort of thing. What makes it happen?
What do you say,
yep.
Dave?
Yep. Yep, it happens.
Yeah.
I don't really have, you know, if you're looking for me to, if you go to the play looking for a great science fiction explanation, you'll be sorely disappointed.
Yeah. It just happens.
It just happens.
Yeah. It's the, you know, a portal exists into John Malkovich's brain. It just happens.
Right, exactly.
Nice. That no, that's sort of totally thing. Acceptable.
I'm sort of that school of absurdism.
Yes. Agreed.
Dig it. I'm really looking forward to seeing this. Thanks so much, guys, for sending or for agreeing to do the hangout. Sorry it took so long to get. We had some technical difficulties getting this one set up, but we finally got together.
It all worked out. Thank you for having us.
Great. Thanks, y'all.
Many thanks to David and Rachel for doing an interview and their patience in waiting for me to sort through technical difficulties. And sorry to you, dear listener, for the shoddy recording quality, but I'm glad we got this one in the can. As I said before, the show comes highly recommended, and it was a blast to talk to Rachel and David about our beloved art form. You can catch In the Meantime when it opens tonight, May 3rd, at Under St. Mark's, where it'll run Thursdays through Saturdays at 8 p.m. until May 19th. Visit AmiosNYC, that's AmiosNYC.org, for more information. Thanks for listening to Go See a Show. I'd love it if you like the podcast on Facebook at facebook.com/GoSeeAShow. Follow the Twitter feed at GoSeeAShow and give a rating and a comment on iTunes. As always, send any comments and suggestions, praise, or complaints to me at Robbie@GoSeeAShowPodcast.com. Until next time. Go see a show.
Woo! So that's the end of the interview.
Cool.
You guys are awesome.